Your song "I Just Had Sex" has 338 million views on YouTube. How many of those do you think have had sex?
It's become more of a thing on TikTok. Like, people play it in their cars, like as their friend leaves somebody's house on like the walk of shame.
So I think
a lot of people do. Yeah, a lot of people probably have just had sex.
I wonder.
But I don't agree with that. Okay, celibacy until marriage, guys. Let's keep it locked.
That is the voice of the great Jorma Taccone, of course, from Lonely Island. They wrote sketches and performed sketches on SNL for years. They sort of invented a form. They were pioneers of a certain type of form of short film that became massive. I mean, these videos they made have hundreds of millions of views on YouTube. I Just Had Sex, which was just referenced, Jack Sparrow, Threw It on the Ground, Lazy Sunday, I'm on a Boat, the Natalie Portman rap song, which is super famous and hilarious. These three guys came from the Bay Area. They started making these sketches on their own, and then they went to SNL, and it blew up, and then they went on. Jorma directed the movie MacGruber and the series that sprouted from that on Peacock. They made the movie Hot Rod. They made the movie Popstar, which I love. By the way, if you haven't seen Popstar, it's so good. And I'm not just saying that because I have a small part in it. I have like a little ridiculous part where I wear a wig in it. We talk about it today. But it's a super, super funny movie. Jorma also used to be my neighbor. We lived next to each other in Brooklyn. We've been friends for a long time. We have such a good chat today. Before we get started, I just want one final reminder. I'll be in Mesa, Arizona this week. There's like 20 tickets left. Salt Lake City, there's only a few tickets left. And if you want to stay tuned about more tour dates that are upcoming, subscribe to the mailing list at verbigs.com, B-I-R-B-I-G-S.com. And I'm coming to DC, but that sold out right away. Same with Madison. There are a few tickets left in Indianapolis. I'm going to be at the Helium Club, comedy club in May with all new material. I'm always psyched to go to Indianapolis. And this is one of my favorite episodes we've ever done. If you've ever wanted to be a creative person or wanted to create something from scratch, we talk a lot about the idea of creating something and showing people what you've created versus explaining the creative idea, which is something I heard Rick Rubin say recently in an interview, which I think is super smart. And I think Lonely Island and Jorma Taccone are kind of the epitome of that idea. Enjoy my chat with the great Jorma Taccone. I always point to the three of you guys, you and Andy Samberg and Akiva Schaffer, as an example for creatives of what to do. And the reason I say that is I think it's always better to do instead of to explain. I saw an interview with Rick Rubin recently, the great music producer, legendary producer, where he goes, like, a lot of times in the studio, it's better to just play something than to explain what you mean, because everybody takes in how they hear an explanation differently.
And comedy and music, I think, are similar in that of like trying to explain something funny rather than just making it. Even so far as like writing it on a page and reading it is still not the same thing as actually seeing it executed.
Not even close. So then, especially with your stuff.
But it is, it's very similar in that way, sort of thing. In that, almost all of our stuff, because in the beginning, we were just, we weren't really asking for permission. We were just sort of like, we were getting approval to like go out and like make something.
Yeah.
But we were literally borrowing a video camera from Maggie Carey, who at the time was Bill Hader's wife, Maggie, wow, sort of thing. And she was working at a film school, and we would literally ask her to borrow a video camera.
This is
before
this is
like SNL like knew what we were doing exactly.
Wow.
She would go like to the lockup, get us a video camera. We would shoot on, like, so like that's how Lazy Sunday was done, da-da-da. But we would
you just did it on your own?
Yeah.
On the weekend, like on Sunday after you wrapped?
No. Like for instance, like we did two little shorts before Lazy Sunday, but Lazy Sunday was our third short
the Christmas episode of our first year.
Yeah.
And so like, so as an example, we were using the computers that were had just gotten fast enough that you could kind of do the thing, but we were recording in our offices with the Macs that they had in there, like that were used for writing, but we were using them to like, you know, like we would put sound programs on there. I made the beat for like Lazy Sunday.
Yeah.
And then we recorded it in our office. We had a mic that we'd all pool money for. So I think that we had brought out from LA, wow, the three of us. And we recorded.
Because you were a sketch group before you came on to SNL.
Yeah. And so we recorded with Chris Parnell, who we were a fan of his raps that he had done, like right, very violent raps that he would do on SNL about like Britney Spears or whatever. And so like, so we were like, well, let's do something with him. And we had kind of had a similar song that we had like made before. And we kind of were like, oh, let's do like a mundane, like super hardcore, like rap about like something mundane, like going to see the Chronicles of Narnia. So we make this song in the office and then we get approval enough to be like, hey, on Thursday, like we're going to go actually record this sort of thing. Like, do you guys mind? Like, and they were like, yeah, you get a couple hours. Like we were out of the building and I don't think we got anything on that week. And we like recorded everything ourselves, bought dig tapes for this illegally borrowed video camera, shooting on, I don't even know, mini DV or something like that.
Yes, that makes sense.
And then we recorded it. Me like holding onto Akiva's backpack, like as we're like I'm leading him down the street and I'm playing the song so that they can do it to track.
Yeah.
So I'm doing like playback on like a Radio Shack speaker that we like literally just like got it out of the building, did it ourselves, and then presented it to the show. And this kind of became how we did things, which was that, like, so we presented the show. Everybody actually sees it for the first time at dress rehearsal.
Oh, wow.
For this Christmas episode. So we're about to go on, like, 3 weeks break. Lauren sees it for the first time, in that dress rehearsal. I think we maybe made a few little tweaks between dress and air. And then it airs. And then, but that way of doing things, of just kind of presenting them to the show after we had like executed them, kind of helped us a ton because our humor was a little weird. It was a little,
yeah,
like with anybody who's in a group of writers, you know, like a lot of our stuff was like a little hive mindy in that, like, you know, like one person has an idea, the other person like piggybacks on that idea, makes it weirder. The third guy does the same thing, and we kind of collectively create our stuff like that. And so it's hard to sort of explain why this is going to be funny. And so but it helped us a ton at the show because when that first thing hit and people were like, what is this? And granted we had it's a huge advantage to be at the show and present something that's very other from the show. Like,
yeah,
it was our first year was the first year that SNL went HD. So it also the show looked better than it ever had too. And then when you cut to like this like podunk,
yeah,
kids making stuff with a video camera, it gave it this tremendous contrast too. So it was like, but it was really helpful for us because that thing that you're talking about of like not having to explain it and just execute it became a thing because nobody quite understood how this first success had happened.
And right,
we were just like, whoa, these guys came out of nowhere and we made this thing, like, you know, like this Lazy Sunday as a thing. And then it kind of helped us because we never really presented anything to the show. We just were able to, right. Everybody saw it at dress rehearsal and was like, what the fuck is this? Like, you know, it's like.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, like, when I'm watching these shorts, I'm thinking to myself, if I was in the writer's room, I hate to admit it, but if this was pitched verbally, I don't know if I would be on board. Like, if you came into a writer's room and were like, okay, so the premise is, it's kind of like these guys and they're rappers, but they're kind of like Color Me Bad. They're kind of like this like lame rap group. Yeah. And then they're singing about like, they're digging a box and it's like a gift box and it like, look, and it's like, or even like, it's like, it's called Mother Lover. And it's like, I fuck your mother. You fuck my mother. It's like, I'd be like, yeah. You know what I mean?
I love that. And now years later, there's a show called MILF Mansion, which is like basically the premise of Mother Lover. You're like, great. So we've come a long way.
If you pitched me Mother Lover, if you were like, so I fuck your mother, you fuck my mother. Like, I'd be like, yeah, Yorm, I don't know. Like, it feels a little blue. It feels a little dirty for the sake of, but then when you see it, immediately you're like, yes.
Well, here's the advantage that we always had, which is that the three of us grew up together. Me and Akiva grew up in Berkeley. Like, I met Akiva 7th grade. We all went to Willard Junior High and then Berkeley High together. So our collective sort of touchstones for everything, both comedy and just like pop culture and all that sort of stuff, like Color Me Bad, you're like all of that. I mean, we grew up to like listening to like H-Town and New Edition, all like all came from like either hip hop, R&B, like dancehall, reggae. Like it's like so our what we liked was already like so. In trying to explain some like something like that, even the costumes, oh, it has to look like that. Like so it just it helped because. And I always almost feel like this is like a little bit of a cheat in terms of like people being able to make stuff together is that you get, you're kind of insulated with that group because we think it's funny already.
Right.
You know what I mean? So like, so that fear that you have as a solo, if you were just solo trying to explain that to somebody, would probably get beaten out of you a little
for
bit.
For sure.
But because there's like three of these, us three weirdos in our little hovel of an office, just being like, we think it's funny. It helped a ton. And then obviously like we were lucky enough to have some successes at the show too in the beginning. And we were just, so it kind of was like, oh, I'll let them do their thing. And don't get involved too much, which is great. I mean, it's the advantage of the show too is like it's always been a show for writers and always been incredible to, in terms of like as a young writer. You know, like some people are 20. Like we met a ton of like Simon Rich. Like when I first met him, he's like fresh out of college.
Mulaney, kid, yeah, and they're 25. And they're, so
like,
25. So
there's kids like running that show, which is like it's why the show is good because it has this like energy of like like you just got out of like you know whatever you've been doing and this is your first real job.
Yeah,
and then the show gives you this responsibility of if you get your show your sketch picked, the show's moving too fast, so you're basically in charge of kind of directing whatever sketch it is that you
right.
So these kids are like. Getting to like go pick props and da-da-da and like
right.
But they're emboldened to be like, yeah, this is what's funny. Like this is like I have to protect this. And if you don't protect it, you learn very quickly that like your sketch is fucked.
Yeah.
And then we had the additional advantage of being like we're protecting it because we're editing it, we're making the music, we're doing all the parts of it. So it's in addition to being lucky that like the show was encouraging of us doing stuff, it's also like we're in control of whether it's funny or not.
I feel like in some ways you're able to I was watching all of your shorts in sequence and I was like the more you were able to do the more you were able to do it feels like so for example like it seemed like with like I remember seeing the Natalie Portman rapping and just being like how did they get her to say this like it's Natalie Portman being like I'm going to kill your dog. It's like, how did this happen? And then did that create the opportunity to do it more with more people?
You'd have to. Well, yes, for sure. Like the fact that we were able to have like Natalie as like one of our first big like. Oh, she's like wildly famous. You know, like she's been in like all that stuff. She was promoting V for Vendetta. So you know, she's this like big time star.
Yeah,
but also like a cool young person too. And she came in and she was like. I want to do a rap. And we were all like, oh, no. Like, we don't – it's a very – you know, what we do – it's bizarre that what we do is, like, kind of, for us, one of the most hateful things you can do. Like, fake rap, I can't think of anything worse than fake rap. And we're very quick to be like, it is not rap music. This is – we are frappers. These are not – this is not real rap music sort of thing. I've seen real rappers, and real rappers are incredible. Like, you know, like we sit there and do like a line like, you know, a ton of times and double it up and da-da-da.
Yeah.
A real rapper can go in and like spit 16 bars like off – like straight through, and it's great.
Yeah.
So that's not us. But to the point, like having like another white person come in and be like, I want to do a rap. You're like, oh boy, do you really? Like,
yeah.
But then she immediately starts spitting all these like Lil' Kim lyrics that she had that are filthy, like fucking filthy lyrics.
Oh wow.
So then,
that
like,
she just
hard,
knew.
And she's
she
doing
just
it
knew.
Hard.
Yeah.
Like to us in our little hovel of a right, like you know, our little office.
That was just her taste in music.
Oh yeah, she just fucking loved it. So she was like, and you're like, geez, like you're like, oh my God, like, all right, yeah, like good. And she's like, you know, this is basically is that filthy enough for you? And we're like, yes, that's exactly
so
what we want.
Oh my gosh. So you were like, what kind of thing are you thinking of? And then she was like, I like this, this, and this.
Well, I think we had said that. When she said, I want to do like a rap song, we were like, it's gotta be kind of hardcore. And then she doubled down and was like, well, how about this like level of hardcore? And we were like, yeah, that's exactly how hardcore you need to be.
It's pretty extraordinary. So. It's like this Oscar level of acting
Yeah.
combined with this completely ridiculous concept.
I'm always amazed, and I'm assuming through this show you probably get a lot of that too, of like what some person that you've always like thought of. Well, I think of them in this lane, and then what it is that they like.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, like it's like Daniel Radcliffe, like was like. Just watching him like spit, he did like Gift of Gab lyrics. He's a rapper from the Bay Area who sadly passed, but who's fantastic. And it's a really complicated rhyme structure stuff that he does. And like having him on the Tonight Show, like doing Gift of Gab things where you're like, oh, I would have no idea that Daniel Radcliffe likes Blackalicious or whatever.
When you were writing Lonely Island sketches, are you thinking, what's the turn? There has to be a turn?
No, I think that they occurred naturally. So I think that we're all assuming there will be, but it's not like a conscious thing of like when that's... We're not thinking along those lines. It's not like 2 + 2 is comedy kind of thing for us necessarily. But who we are and our level of either boredom with our own ideas...
Right.
Or not...
Is it boredom?
Or not wanting to repeat ourselves. So then, because that was the other advantage / disadvantage of the show was being like, we did something like that last week. So it did help that there were three of us and there's always sort of democracy. Like if two of us understood the idea and the third guy was like, I don't understand why this is funny, you guys, that guy leaves the room.
Oh.
And the other two work on it. And then the other guy comes back in and will say... like the ABC of like what their problem with the idea is. And
okay.
Usually like, so one that would help us in terms of like if one of us had a problem with the idea, then we would work on it until that third guy is satiated.
You bring them over.
And like, and either the logic is tighter because of that, or
right.
The joke is funnier because of that, or we get to the kernel of like why it's better now with the three of us thinking through something. But the other advantage is that piggybacking thing that I'm talking about of just like when one of us is bored with the fucking idea, we're moving on. So then, we always had a, at least I always think about this with editing, of like the dumber the joke, the faster you tell it, for us at least, or you don't tell it at all if it's too
fucking
stupid.
What do you explain?
I just mean like, we never wanted the audience to get ahead of us.
Right.
So I think that led to turns. Of just being like, of like either we've done it before, so like last week sort of thing, or like something we did like 2 years previous or whatever it is. And so we just always wanted to like challenge ourselves to do something different sort of thing. And having the three of us, or honestly, like some of the people who we worked with, like Justin Timberlake, like working with him, he's a funny dude. So it's not like in those later shorts, he would actually spend time with us and he's actually like adding to the mix as well.
Who's Justin Timberlake?
He's an American recording artist.
Did you discover him, Justin Timberlake?
No, but what's funny about Justin is that I think the three of us, me and Ian Keeve, were always much more self-deprecating. So I think, and Justin is a man who is, you know, both handsome, wildly talented.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of talent, and clearly always has been.
Yeah.
So I think that is not my life. So I think, so having
Mickey Mouse Club, like age 9, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I don't think he's had many failures in his life.
Yeah.
So the fact that we could write something to your point about like how would you know this is good? It's not like we know, like everyone's going to love fucking Dick in a Box. Justin comes in, we're messing around with that. The minute we're done, he's like, is it? Is a hit.
This really?
Is a hit. And we're like, what are you talking about?
Wow.
Guys who are going to get arrested for putting their penises in boxes at the end of this video, this is a hit.
I mean, that's like a perfect example of like on paper, if you pitched Laser Cats to me, I would just go like, yeah, maybe. And then like, I think that what makes Laser Cats work, and maybe I'm completely wrong and you can explain to me the logic of it, is that you really want, your characters really want to convince Lorne that it's good.
I think that was one of the things that I actually learned at SNL. Like, not actually, we learned a lot of things at SNL, but was that without the context of Laser Cats is basically like 2 12-year-olds making their own film and bringing it to Lorne Michaels. So it's like Andy and Bill Hader have made a short film called Laser Cats, where there's been a nuclear war and now cats have the ability to shoot lasers out of their mouths. So everyone's using them as weapons. And so sometimes they're real cats and sometimes they're fake cats. And part of it came from me cocking my own cat as a gun and pretending to shoot my wife with it.
With your cat, yeah.
Yeah, you're just going... Amazing that we're still together. But
But without the context, and I may have been Akiva that like pointed this out, but he was like, you need the audience, and this is often the case with any SNL sketch, to look for what the joke is.
Yeah, they
and
need
if it,
to know.
And if it was just 2 12-year-olds making a short, you'd be like, I don't want to watch this.
Yeah.
But having the judgment of them presenting it to an adult man who's seen everything and is over everything and knows this is fucking horrible.
Yes.
And then we would always like, so they pitch it to Lauren. He says, this sounds like a bad idea. And they say, wait, let's watch it before you judge anything. And then it is bad. And then we would choose the worst, most embarrassing moment in it. And then be like, no, you cut back to Lauren. Just being like, yeah. I was right.
Working It Out is supported by Squarespace. Squarespace is an all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. I should point out that this is an ad for Squarespace, but I love Squarespace. I was thrilled when they became an advertiser because we've used them for years. Our website for Thank God for Jokes was Squarespace. Our website for Stand Up and Vote was Squarespace. Couldn't recommend it more highly. We use it all the time. Start a completely personalized website with the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint. You can sell exclusive content on your site by adding a paywall to sell memberships or courses, or sell files your customers can download like PDFs, music, or eBooks. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, head to squarespace.com/birbigs, B-I-R-B-I-G-S, to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/burbigs to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Support for Working It Out comes from Aura Frames. Looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? This is the perfect thing. Aura Frames. It's like a Wi-Fi connected digital picture frame. Jenny and I have these at our apartment. We love them. Super easy to upload and share photos via the Aura app. I can't say enough about these Aura frames. So we got them and we loaded up a bunch of photos of like our daughter when she was little and at different stages of development or at different ages, us going to the beach and just vacations and all these kinds of things over the years. And then it just flips to the next photo and the next photo, like every, you know, whatever you put it at, 5 seconds, 10 seconds. And it's wonderful and it kind of warms up a room. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting auraframes.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's auraframes.com. Use code WIO at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. Your song, I Just Had Sex, has 338 million views on YouTube. How many of those do you think have had sex?
It's become more of a thing on TikTok. Like, people play it in their cars, like, as their friend leaves somebody's house on, like, the walk of shame.
So I think
a lot of people do. Yeah. A lot of people probably have just had sex.
I wonder...
But I don't agree with that, okay? Celibacy until marriage. Guys, let's keep it locked.
Let's keep it locked. Yeah, yeah.
If you get anything out of this interview, it's don't have sex until marriage.
Yeah, no, that's the key. I think that's the message of Lonely Island, generally.
Always.
In a general sense, yeah.
There's a deep undercurrent.
No sex before marriage. I don't remember that song, though.
No, yeah, yeah. Well, you got to read between the lines.
I mean, maybe this is neither here nor there. The people who love your music, some of them are the people who, the three of you nerds,
yeah,
would not like probably so much.
Yes, there was a little bit of a thing that we had with that in terms of like the expansive, you know, like, I mean, obviously you make anything and then you don't know where it goes or how it's going to be. I mean, they seem
to be clear, you're nerds.
Yes, we're total nerds. I'm not going to disagree with that. I don't think anyone's going to disagree.
You're losers.
But, you know, like, you make something like I'm on a Boat, and then like you see it being played at like Lake Havasu or whatever, and you're like, oh, well, that's that. I didn't expect it to go there.
That?
It's like frat culture,
oh, okay,
like Spring Break level, you know. Like,
yeah.
And you know,
the January 6th riots, and they played it.
Oh my God, it was huge with that, huge with that crowd. But you know what? Insurrectionist by sneakers too, as Michael Jordan would say.
Oh my God.
I don't know if you'd say that now. I bet he wouldn't say that now.
I just had sex. You have John McEnroe singing, "I just had sex and I'll never go back." John McEnroe, one of the greatest tennis players of all time. You directed him to say, "I just had sex and I'll never go back." Did you ever feel self-conscious directing someone like that?
I can't even remember how that happened. That's the miracle of SNL, because there's so many people that come through. I mean, you like going to the show. Yeah. Like, for instance, the first time I met Paul McCartney was just coming out of a doorway.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that sentence?
The first time I met Paul McCartney, I don't know.
We're going to just do a pickup on that again.
But like, you're like, he's coming out of Lauren's office, and you're just like, hey, this guy is like meant the world to all of our parents.
Sorry, we didn't get sound on that. Go ahead again. Start up with the first time I met Paul McCartney.
Paul McCartney was,
you become Shy Ronnie.
Shy Ronnie met Paul McCartney. Yeah, right? The older I get, the bigger of a dick I think I sound like. But you're like in the hallways, like Barack Obama, senator at the time, senator.
I'm Barack sorry,
Obama.
We didn't have sound on that. Go ahead again.
But you're like, you're literally shaking hands with people. But to your point, I don't know how the McEnroe thing happened. Like, it was like, maybe he was in the building,
right.
You know what I mean? Just like why is he in it?
When you go, so you guys were in the Bay Area, you grew up together.
Yeah.
And then you didn't all audition for the show, right? Just
no,
Andy
me,
did?
No, me and Andy both auditioned.
Oh, you and Andy both show. Did, but Akiva didn't.
Yes. Okay. And so we had a different, like our lives in LA and how we got to the show were slightly different than most people. Because most people are like, either they're doing like stand-up relentlessly, which Andy did a ton of. Or they're doing live sketch stuff on like Improv Olympic or UCB or like wherever they've come from, but they've honed characters and sketches and things that they are good at and know work on stage.
Yeah.
So the fact that Andy did as well as he did, like, I mean, like Andy auditioned, I think he had two auditions. I had one because I think they knew. But it's like the most nerve-wracking thing I've ever done. Like, I vomited twice before my audition. And
were you on stage at 30 Rock?
We met a lot of SNL folks our second year of writing for the MTV Movie Awards. And we specifically worked for the MTV Movie Awards because we were like, we get to write for famous people. Like kind of what SNL is, of just like being able to like make people, famous people do crazy shit sort of thing, and have a budget to do it, like of like sketches and all that.
Who was hosting?
So our first year that we wrote for him was Lindsay Lohan. The second year was Jimmy Fallon.
Okay.
So when Jimmy was on the show, like Steve Higgins, who's now Jimmy's guy and like a big producer on SNL still. And
of course.
Yeah. And Higgins was there and like a bunch of SNL writers and da-da. So we got to hang out with those guys and kind of not endear ourselves to it, but when it came time to go to bat for who gets even audition, it's hard to even get an audition at SNL. Like Andy had kind of proven himself, like just worthy of auditioning sort of thing. And so Andy got to do it. And then I think because we were a trio, they were like, do you guys want to audition too? And I was like, yes, I was more of a performer, but I would say I sort of leaned more almost more drama even than, but equally to Andy, like I didn't even have stand-up experience or thing. You have to do like, what is it? It's like five characters and, or like it's four characters and three impressions or whatever. You have to do this many. But we were making it up like days before we went on sort of thing. I was just glad that I got one good laugh out of Tina. I could tell it was her. Like it just in the dark, you just go up and you're on camera. It's being beamed to Los Angeles too. So it's fucking terrifying. But I did an impression of a 13-year-old at a bar mitzvah, like who wants to dance but can't. So it was a lot of like just like nervously like picking his pockets and I like this song.
Oh my gosh.
Like not saying anything. It was no words.
Oh my gosh.
But like I got a solid laugh out of Tina. And that. So you know what? That was almost more worth it than getting the show. I'm just kidding.
Were you when Andy got offered it, were you did you talk among the group of like?
Yes, there was a period in which we knew Andy was hired, and there was about a week or so, or however many days it was, where they weren't letting us know whether we were going to be hired as writers as well. And me and Akiva had actually gone in and like had a writer meeting with Lorne.
Oh.
And so the fact that I didn't have that that meeting, and I wasn't going to get picked for the show. I mean, the people that got in that year were like hater.
Oh my God.
Andy, I'm just making excuses now of why I didn't get it, but they're fucking hitter. I mean, like yeah. It was like,
well, that Sudeikis cast was crazy. On, like, Sudeikis was in, I mean, that those
like
years.
Incredible people sort of thing. Like, and so it wasn't too surprising that I think mine was like a little bit more run of the mill, kind of like, oh, he's solid, but not
Forte
like.
Forte, you know, might have been in there. Wig might have been in
Forte
there.
Forte was already there. Wig got hired that year. I mean, it was, our class was, yeah. I don't know if you'd describe it like that, but
you power know, group.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Like, and all really sweet. Very encouraging, like it was, it almost felt like a different kind of, because I remember like we watched like documentaries before we got to SNL that were all like, yeah, it's cutthroat, nobody laughs at their shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody wants to like, you know, like have their shit get passed over in your shit because they laughed at it. And it was not like that for us. At least our class was like very, very encouraging. And maybe it was because we had like a little insular, our little insular group that maybe I didn't experience any of that kind of feeling of like of just like competitiveness in that way. But it was also that people were doing really well too.
You gave me this amazing note because I did a series of readings for Don't Think Twice at our apartment, which you and I were next door neighbors for like a period of years.
Yeah.
And so you and your wife, Mari, would come over and help give notes and read parts in Don't Think Twice. You gave a note that's like a pretty seminal part of the film, which is you were like, when Keegan's character gets SNL, you were like...
it's not SNL, by the way. It's a different show.
Weekend Live.
Yeah, Weekend Live. It's a totally different show.
You can't
retroactively sue anyone.
you said like when you started working at SNL, you were like, just when you walk in, there's an awe that you have when you walk through the halls of a reverence. You're just like, I can't believe I'm in these halls and I'm supposed to be here. And you said to me as a filmmaking friend, you know, you were like, you should really give Keegan's character a moment to take it in. And we put that in. And I think it's one of the most important parts of the whole movie. It's just a silent moment where he's looking up at the portraits on the walls.
It's funny that it actually gives me the feeling of like the hair standing on the back of my neck, remembering how that felt for me multiple times too. It's not just like once. There's so many moments because you're sleeping there. I slept there twice a week usually on shitty couches. And you're like, granted, they're probably not the same couches as fucking Belushi's. Like, but you're like the people that have come through here and the legend. And even, it's even like people who are only on for a season, like Larry David's on the wall. Yeah. Fucking like, you know, it's like Sarah Silver, all these people that you don't even think of as like, oh,
Ben
like
Stiller, being
like,
a,
like where you're like, holy shit, the people who have come through here. And the fact that, like, not only are you allowed to be there, but to have any success there whatsoever is, like, is mind-blowing.
This is called the slow round. So,
okay.
Do you remember growing up, like, an inauthentic version of yourself? Like where you cringe looking back on yourself, like growing up.
I don't know if this is inauthentic, but I got into, I was like goth-ish for about, like in high school, so we all went to Berkeley High, and then I left Berkeley High, I went to a Catholic all-boys school, and I was in, my friend wanted me to be in a punk band called Writhe. I didn't play. He was like, you can just play power chords. Da, da, da. And so during this time, I bought like cargo shorts and like a wallet chain. I mean, there were people who did this probably successfully, but not me. And like Doc Martens. And then I met on a BART train, I met a girl who went to Cal. I was like my junior year of high school. I met a girl who went to Cal. And because I was like a Berkeley kid, I think I was probably just more... like we were all drinking at like 14 and don't drink while you're 14.
Don't drink don't, or have, don't have sex. Too.
Yeah, those are the key. Absolutely do not do
those
that.
Those are
guys.
He didn't make songs about them, but no, don't do them.
No, but so I met this girl from Cal Berkeley, which is college, and she was a freshman. And so I ended up dating this girl, and I was very impressed with myself because I'm like, I'm dating a college girl who is like a goth
So she like dressed me in like black flowing skirts, and like we went to like goth clubs in like Gilman, which is a pretty big punk club in wow. It's like where like Green Day and like Operation Ivy and like a lot of those kind of early Bay Area, the ones that popped off kind of. But yeah, like I would say that was
Operation Ivy. That's a throwback.
Inauthentic, isn't it? An inauthentic version of myself. Yeah.
Can you think of a moment in your life that you realize now changed your life, but you didn't realize it at the time?
No, because it was SNL. But if I really go back, it would be meeting Akiva.
Meeting Akiva and Andy. Yeah.
Andy was like, we were always sort of set, because Andy's 2 years younger than me, a year younger than in terms of classes. But meeting Akiva, I think, changed my life for me and Andy's life in particular. Because Akiva was always the most motivated dude I've ever.
Is he the nerdiest of the group?
Yes, in terms of like technical savvy,
yeah.
For sure. Yeah, like I've learned I learned editing from Akiva. But he's just, he was always, it's interesting that like going back to the confidence thing, he was going into like credit card debt when me and Andy were like so paranoid.
Right.
Early days, like post graduating from college. And me and Andy were like, we would all take shitty temp jobs occasionally, yeah. Through like a temp agency. But Akiva was always just like, yeah, fuck that. I'm just going to go into credit card debt. And then he paid it off like his first week of SNL. But he was always just very confident that he was competent enough. I don't think he was like ever thinking like, I'm a genius. Da, da, da.
Yeah.
But I think he was just always like confident that we could do it.
It would work
out. If we applied ourselves correctly, which was like making stuff and honing our,
yeah,
I wouldn't say craft because that sounds fucking up its own butt, but just continuing to kind of learn and produce and make stuff. And he was right. And I still don't have that level of confidence that Akiva has. I'm better now, but he just is like, he just understands things in a different way.
Really,
and I think I would give it up to Akiva in that way. I mean, like, I think we all have our own motivation and are very motivated people.
Yeah.
And we all have our own lane kind of
thing.
Like, I mean, we're very much like Andy's Alvin. I'm Theodore, like the pudgy Theodore. and Akiva's Simon. So I think, so yes, the nerdiest one. But I do think that I don't think without Akiva, I don't know if we would be here, where we are.
That's interesting because in Popstar, you break into your dynamic a bit, you know,
and then we kind of steal each other's dynamics,
right?
Too.
Right.
And there's definitely like a bunch of like Lawrence and me, and like, you know, like I'm the one who's out on the fucking farm,
right?
I'm in New York,
right? So Akiva's character is out on the farm, which in real life is you in New York across the country,
like,
so,
yeah, like elements of it, yeah.
And then what's your character? So in Popstar, if people don't know, like basically it's like a boy band. That was huge.
Yeah, they're like, we're kind of the Beastie Boys, basically.
Sort of the Beastie Boys. And then
we break up.
They break up, and then they go different directions, and then they all come together in the end.
Yeah, and Andy's character becomes wildly famous and successful in almost like a Bieber level of fame. And then I become like his like DJ who keeps getting relegated further and further back. And being treated less and less like a friend. And then Akiva is so mad about the breakup and a certain kind of... disrespect that he got, that he sort of loses his mind and moves to a farm. And then we come back at the end of the movie and we're buddies again.
But in real, and of course I was in the movie as the TMZ guy.
Of course.
CMZ. Which is, I shot one day.
It was like half a day.
It's like half a day.
The amount of fucking footage we got from you guys.
It's like 9 minutes of the movie.
It's fucking great.
It's
you, Arnett. I mean, it's like...
It's Chelsea Peretti.
Yeah.
Eric Andre.
It's such a good group,
Arnett,
too. And also, by the way, that's super fun for like just comedy people to have like you and Eric Andre and Chelsea all together. But also like Arnett's like fucking murdering.
Arnett is one of the funniest people on the planet. And I think all of us, me and Eric and Chelsea and Will, were just trying not to laugh. I mean, wearing these crazy wigs and
outfits. Do you remember the bit that he did? That I don't even think it made it into the deleted scenes, where he's getting super excited about something and he's clearly like coming on himself.
Oh my God.
And then he's behind a little
I remember in real life.
And it's the TMZ bit where he's like leaning over a cubicle so you don't see what's happening on his lower half.
Oh my God.
And he's like leaning against his wall and he's like,
I remember this thing.
And then he does this bit.
I filed a complaint about this. I've never heard back.
And then he does this bit at the end where he clearly wipes his hand on the back of the cubicle and you're just like, oh God.
This is so horrible.
Like the level of detail. It's so gross.
Anyway,
Lego Masters is a great show. He's a all American now Canadian treasure.
Working It Out is supported by Squarespace. Squarespace is an all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. I should point out that this is an ad for Squarespace, but I love Squarespace. I was thrilled when they became an advertiser because we've used them for years. Our website for Thank God for Jokes was Squarespace. Our website for Stand Up and Vote was Squarespace. Couldn't recommend it more highly. We use it all the time. Start a completely personalized website with the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint. You can sell exclusive content on your site by adding a paywall to sell memberships or courses, or sell files your customers can download like PDFs, music, or eBooks. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, head to squarespace.com/Birbigs, B-I-R-B-I-G-S, to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/Birbigs to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Support for Working It Out comes from Aura Frames. Looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? This is the perfect thing. Aura Frames. It's like a Wi-Fi connected digital picture frame. Jenny and I have these at our apartment. We love them. Super easy to upload and share photos via the Aura app. I can't say enough about these Aura frames. So we got them and we loaded up a bunch of photos of like our daughter when she was little and at different stages of development or at different ages, us going to the beach and just vacations and all these kinds of things over the years. And then it just flips to the next photo and the next photo, like every, you know, whatever you put it at, 5 seconds, 10 seconds. And it's wonderful and it just kind of warms up a room. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting auraframes.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's auraframes.com. Use code WIO at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. I was at the MacGruber premiere.
In New York.
New York.
Yeah, yeah.
Jenny and I were like, and we didn't know you at the time. Jenny and I were like,
yeah.
This is going to be the biggest comedy in like the decade.
You know, this is so funny. What's also sad and made me feel really good and then very bad when it actually came out was that Val Kilmer, who plays the villain in MacGruber, and you know, he was in Top Secret, which I think was the first comedy that I saw that I was like, oh, I didn't know adults were allowed to be this funny.
Yeah.
So it blew my mind. I'm just like, I didn't think this is incredible.
Yeah.
And he was like, I've only been wrong about one movie before of what it was going to be successful. No, before this,
he was like,
this is going to be huge.
Yeah.
So now he's been wrong about two movies. Yeah. And the other movie was Top Gun. But he was like, it's not going to work. this is not good.
He didn't think Top Gun was going to work.
That's amazing. And then he was wrong about
Oh, that's amazing.
Good Company. But his taste in comedy was so, like, I was just like, the fact that he was in Top Secret, I was like, this is great. And then what happens, like,
just to give people context, like, the movie is a cult hit and spawned a series.
Years later, 10 years later, yeah.
But didn't do, like, big box office numbers. Akin to like Bridesmaids or something. I mean, the things that were, it did box office, it just didn't do like mega.
It basically made its budget in box office, which is not good.
And then Popstar, I would say similarly, did well, but it didn't do box, it didn't do mega.
And then Hot Rod, same thing.
Yeah. It did well, but didn't do mega.
Three cultish kind of movies. But it's such a bummer when you're, why you made something and is truly for you to like make your friends laugh and you think you're successful at it. Like I always knew, like, I'm very proud of Hot Rod. I'm very proud of
it. Oh, yeah.
Like, for us making Hot Rod, for us making a pop star, which is a very hard movie to make. We edited for 7.5 months on that.
Like, we
fucking worked that shit into like the shape it is.
Oh, yeah.
And then MacGruber, same thing. Like we.
And it's beloved. I mean, Pop Star, I think more people talk to me about Pop Star than any movie I've ever been in. And I'm only in it for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It's beloved.
Yeah. I mean, and granted, like at this stage in having made stuff, we would definitely sort of know, like, oh, people are going to find it 6 months, a year later. Like for the people that care, you know, like we've made things that I'm like, oh, I'm not embarrassed by these things.
Yeah.
But it's still having that, like that initial weekend. Like, I mean, I've been with my wife for 20 something years. So like, I don't know what that feeling of like a breakup would feel like, but that's as close as I can imagine to the feeling of just like, America doesn't like you.
Right.
So like that opening weekend of being like, oh, you know, I mean, like Hot Rod came out it wasn't the same weekend, but it was like right around the time that like Superbad came out, and you were like, oh, that's success. People love this shit.
Right.
So like, and we're friends with like Jonah and those guys, and like,
yeah.
and they were all, they
hell.
All loved it.
Hell.
They, yeah, Jonah, fucking hell, Jesus. Jonah Hill. I'm like the real Lauren of this podcast. You know when Paul said to me, Simon or? Oh my God.
So, but you were friends with people who were having like mega hits,
and they liked it. Like, I've always had like the moments of like, you know, like, and after the fucking MacGruber series, like Ben Stiller called and was like, "It's so good," and like, and so I've had those moments,
yeah.
of like people that I really respect liking the stuff that we do, but not that moment of like the, which is like so great that like people love Palm Springs, like,
oh my God,
Kiva's movie Chippendale. Like, I mean, like to have an actual, which I wasn't involved with, but to have an actual success and be like, oh, people like this, and it seems like it did well. I mean, I don't know how you quantify fucking streaming, but like, you know, like,
I think that we're gonna wrap it up. I think the lesson of the whole thing is threefold.
Yeah.
Make your own things. If you're creative and you're listening,
yeah.
make your own things instead of trying to pitch them.
Yeah,
just make whatever it is. Always. Small scale.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys were making stuff for practically nothing.
Yeah.
So I would say make your own things. And then I would also say yes and a group. Like yes and with a group of people.
Yeah.
And because what you guys did with Lonely Island is yes and this. And yes and even more bizarre. Yes and even more bizarre. And then I think that the final lesson is that don't take sort of financial failure in the moment or whatever it is to be what the long game is of your piece of art, whatever it is, whether it's painting or an improv group or sketch group or stand up or whatever it is, because you actually don't know. You literally didn't know. I was at your premiere of MacGruber. And it didn't do the amount of business you thought, and you were really disappointed. And it's like, now it's like a cult phenomenon and became a series, like 10 years later.
Yes. And
those are my three lessons of the Yorma Taccone experience.
Yes.
Do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, you learn from all of it. And there was an article that Larry David wrote 15 years ago, or I can't remember how long ago, where he was talking about LA versus New York. And his quote about LA was, and I think it just applies to Hollywood, was, if you can't make it here, you can't make it anywhere.
That's very funny.
And I think that what he meant was, is just like, if you're reasonably intelligent and you just keep going,
yeah,
and you keep learning and you don't take those failures as like, I'm done, like I gotta go become a lawyer or whatever, whatever it is. So the thing that like, if you're a creative and you're learning, just keep going.
Yeah.
And it will happen eventually. That's obviously a very fucking privileged position for me to be like, it works out. My dumb ideas are able to, I think it's true. Like, you know, and you find your, and even if the thing that you're making is so, it's for the fucking 2% of America or the world, that's still a lot of people.
The richest Americans.
The richest, that's what I'm talking about. Just the richest. No, but if it's some obscure.
No.
This is what cartoon you want to do. There are people that want to see it.
This is what George Carlin said, supposedly, and I love that he said this, which is, he goes, I don't need to be popular with 90% of people. I need to be popular with like 1% of people.
Yeah. but really fucking
popular. And who are really into it. Who are really into
it. And they have money.
And finally, we do Working It Out for a Cause. Is there a nonprofit that you contribute to and will contribute to them, and we'll link to them in the show notes?
Brooklyn Food Bank, I would say, should be the charity that people should donate to. That's lovely that you do that.
You and I both live here, and this is I've contributed to them before. It's foodbanknyc.org. We're going to contribute to them. We're going to link to them in the show notes. Thanks, Yorma, for coming, and I can't wait to see what you do next.
Thank you, Mike. It was a pleasure. We'll come back anytime.
All right.
Working it out, because it's not done. We're working it out, because there's no one.
That's going to do it for another episode of Working It Out. You can follow The Lonely Island on at The Lonely Island on Instagram. Andy Samberg, Akiva Schaefer, Yorma Taccone. Those brilliant, brilliant folks. I just can't wait to see what they do next. Our producers of Working It Out are myself, along with Joseph Birbiglia and Peter Salamone, associate producer Mabel Lewis, consulting producer Seth Barish, assistant producers Gary Simons and Lucy Jones, sound mix by Ben Cruz, supervising engineer Kate Balinski, special thanks to Marissa Hurwitz and Josh Huffall, David Raphael, and Nina Quick. My consigliere is Mike Berkowitz, special thanks to Jack Antonoff and Bleachers for their music. Special thanks to my wife, the poet J. Hope Stein. Her book, Little Astronaut, is in bookstores now. Special thanks, as always, to my daughter, Una, who built the original radio fort made of pillows. Thanks most of all to you who are listening to our little podcast. We are approaching 100 episodes, and you can do us one favor. You know what that favor is. You know, I don't even have to tell you. You go on Apple Podcasts, you just say literally in the comments, just say, what is your favorite episode? Because when you find a podcast, so often, you don't even know where to begin. People go, hey, you should listen to Working It Out. But no one specifies, you gotta listen to the episode with Zarna Garg. You gotta listen to the episode with John Green. You gotta listen to the episode with John Mulaney. And so what I'm saying to you is, you tell people. I'm putting it on you. But it actually really does help us out, and it helps us sort of reach more folks. Again, thanks most of all to you who are listening. Tell your friends, tell your enemies. And if you don't have any more enemies, let's say you've converted all your enemies at this point. You've been listening to the podcast. You've been doing the homework, so to speak. Converting enemies into listeners to the podcast. I would go out and make some new enemies. You know, you're on the subway. You're holding on to the bar. You can flash someone a look. They go, what are you looking at? You go, my eyes were just looking in that direction. I'm sorry about that. And they're like, what? And then you're like, let me tell you about this podcast. We're working out, everybody. I'll see you next time.